welcome to another thrilling episode of Truth and Reconciliation. It's the Pellwood Fantasy Football League podcast. He's Peter Elwood. I'm Seth Martin. It's great to have you with us. Peter, how are you, sir?
I am slowly coming down off the high from our wonderful draft day festivities, and now am all of a sudden realizing that the actual football season is upon us and starts tomorrow night, and that realization hit me very hard tonight, and I really started to get a little bit excited about it.
Yeah, earlier today at work, I started humming the NFL theme song, and it just kind of struck me, man, it's here. Another year, another season, another great time. This is one of, I mean, fall is one of the best, you know, seasons of the year, and it brings us together in ways that the rest of the year does not. And I love that we get to circle up, do podcasts, do drafts, do fantasy football, text, chat, discuss players, scores, stats, games, the NFL. It's a great, great time to be alive.
And don't forget trade offers.
And don't forget trade offers. Sometimes those are a little bloodier than the rest of the camaraderie experienced in fantasy football. But yes, you're right. Trade offers are all an equal part of the experience for sure. So we are here now. It is Wednesday night. We are kicking off with our annual preseason podcast, but post-draft. And as we discussed earlier with the fellas on Sunday, this is apparently one of the fan favorites out there. This is the post-draft podcast in which we dissect the draft. We discuss all of the choices made, all of the players picked up. And of course, we love talking about the value of players, the choices that went into it. Really just analyzing the overall performance of all of our league managers. And tonight, we're in for a real treat because that was quite a draft. What do you think about it, Pete?
It was an amazing draft. It was, when I listened to the podcast last week, knows we had high expectations for the day. It was going to be, kind of a packed day, just of man time. And we always love the auction draft and just looking forward to it so much. And for the most part in life, I try to enter into anything with low expectations so that I will my experience of it will be more enjoyable because my expectations were lower and avoid disappointment as much as possible in that way. But it was hard to temper these expectations, but I was not disappointed. It was an incredible draft, preceded by surrounded by really just an incredible day. The camaraderie was really strong, especially for those of us who were able to get together in Dallas. I was, I was kind of blown away by how much fun it was to hang out with everyone for Rangers game beforehand and dinner and then the actual draft as well. So it was a great fun-filled day, and I thought everyone did really well in the draft too. I felt like everyone came to play. We had no one go on auto bid, which is always a big deal. Mm-hmm. Really changes the environment. We had people dial in from the phone. We had and then we just had a league full of people who obviously did the research. It was just a really sharp draft. It was intense. It was really challenging. And, if you came out feeling good about it, then you could really feel good about it because it was a tough room to be drafting in.
Absolutely. I would say the word was definitely intense. It was clear that everybody came to play. Everybody brought their A game. Everybody had done their homework. I can't even see a ton of missed evaluations on players, definitely some overspending. But in terms of the bidding itself, golly, we were tight in our estimations and our values, and it was really tough to get a bargain deal in there. I could not believe the degree of preparation and how homogenous we were as a league manager. And that really speaks to the quality of our league, for one, but also just the level of commitment that all of our league managers have risen too over the past few years. What are your thoughts on the preparation of our managers?
It's night and day from when we first started doing auction draft, where really no one knew what they were doing, to now. It's so difficult to walk away with a stacked team coming out of the auction draft. I mean, it's you have to make sacrifices somewhere in order to get the players you want. You can't just sweep the board with good picks everywhere. There's definitely a give and take because the the market that you're walking into, the marketplace, is not just not going to allow you to get value everywhere and load up your team. And I, you know, I feel like it's easier to capitalize on other people's mistakes in a snake draft, because you know, if one guy is just kind of going off the reservation in a snake draft, that leaves a lot of opportunity for you. But in an auction draft, if one guy's going off the reservation, everyone just kind of lets him go, but the other 11 guys are going to keep you honest.
Yeah, that's right.
And or the other 10 guys are going to keep you honest and not let you get all that value and keep it for yourself. So definitely the best draft and experience there is out there, and that's why we do it, and that's why we love it. And worth its weight in gold this year for sure.
Yeah, last week we made a lot of big ado about how we were anticipating not only the intensity from preparation and just sharp drafting skill, but also the dynamic of being in the same room with the majority of our league managers. Do you think that lived up to the pressure that we put on it, having experienced the draft for the first time in years, mostly all together?
You know, I didn't feel as intimidated being in the same room with everyone as I expected to be, but it just made it a lot more fun, for sure. You know, there was kind of pockets of the room that had different environments going on. You know, Derek and Ben were at one end of the table, just kind of chuckling to themselves and feeling a brotherhood, and that they felt like they were the least prepared in the room. And you and Jared were at the other end of the table, both with multiple screens you were looking at. And there was a broad spectrum in the room for preparation, but it was just a lot of fun. You know, you got to share the experience all together. You know, I remember a distinct moment where I was scared for my draft's life when I had made a bid, and it got down to 4 seconds left on the clock, and my bid was still the best one, and I really didn't want that player. And then the announcer came on and said, "Going once," and then I started panicking until another bid came in, and then I just let out a great big sigh of relief. And I felt everyone share that with me in that moment. I feel like everyone kind of understood what was going on, and they shared that with me. And it was good. It was just way better than if I was at home by myself, having that experience and not having to share it with it just made it all the better.
Did you feel like you had within this draft an arch nemesis going up against you? Was there one person more often than not that you were getting into it with, or that was frustrating you, or really finding that nerve to push into you?
I don't feel like I had an arch nemesis, but I feel like I was probably that person for other people. I definitely feel like I pushed Jared on a few of his players. I pushed Brent on a couple of his players. Mm-hmm. I tend to usually match up often with those guys head to head. I think we've got pretty similar come at it from a pretty similar approach, so we usually like some of the same players. But I feel like I didn't end up winning a lot of those battles, and they did. But I feel like I did, or all the value was sucked out of those players. I feel like I did my job in price protecting on those guys. So I didn't feel like there was one person I kept matching up with. I feel like there were, like Ben and Andy and maybe later on in the draft, Ben and Derek. And then I feel like Scott was in there too on a lot of the bidding. So I think it was, it was fun to see that, where you just see the same guys locked up repeatedly on certain players and just going back and forth until someone finally gave way.
Yeah. Well, it was just such a raw intensity that we got to experience. I mean, but it was like a blink of an eye too, in that even except for the last few, bargage bin picks, kind of fishing for sleepers there at the end, the majority of the draft flew by. Like, it was like all of a sudden 2 hours had gone by, 2.5 hours. It's like, good grief, like we've been in it.
Yeah.
Thankfully,
yeah, I think my draft was done at about the 2.5 hour mark, and I was surprised it was that long. I had been in a snake draft that went 2 hours and felt way longer. the week before. But man, the alternate just keeps you engaged the whole time, and you better be engaged the whole time, or else you're gonna miss something.
Miss out,
you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, ended up being 3 hours long, but it didn't feel like there was any wasted time.
Well, the competition was fierce. I enjoyed having the conference call in for those that couldn't make it with us there in person. But man, what a difference it makes to have all 12 guys sitting in the draft lobby together. No auction bidders automatically going in to auto draft for anybody. Just pure, intense competition. And it worked out for us. Man, the rankings will demonstrate. It is anybody's race this year. There are no real outliers when it comes to quality, or at least potential competitiveness across the board going into week one. At least that's my assessment. Would you care to comment?
Yeah, so last year when we had this podcast and we were looking at it, we had a much wider range of outcomes. Mm-hmm. One thing we'll do is we'll go through and we'll look at basically bang for buck. You know, you had $200 to spend. How much value did you really get out of that? And last year we had ranges going from $165 worth of value to up to $256 worth of value. So, you know, a $90 spread. And this year that spread is more like $181 to $212. So down to, you know, $30. And you see it in our, if we look at the week one projected scoring, the point spread for the entire elite, all 12 teams fit into a 17-point gap. The highest projected score in week one right now is 141. The lowest is 124. So, you know, we're all bunched together much more so to start this year than we were last year, which should, and last year the regular season was not short of its own intensity. So I expect that to go up even more this year.
Right. I remember distinctly within that spread, our quarterback-driven auto bidder was one of our lower ranked. This year, obviously, has a leg up because everybody was present, but it also has a leg up because everybody did some minimal amount of research, if not put a heck of a lot of time into it. I know that Ben did some last-minute cramming there as we did our little beverage and snack run. He found his fantasy football magazine and tried to stuff some last minute information down here, or at least give out the appearance of such. But ultimately, these drafts will contain both, you know, their mix of strength and maybe a little bit of weakness here and there. But I'm anxious to get down into the nitty gritty. So are you ready to dive in and start giving out what the fans want? And that is our grade assessment. Now, quickly, let's go back to 2015-16 season.
Brent, you gave an A-, and I gave an A+. So we were right on the money with Brent, and he got our highest grades. Actually, you gave Ben an A over Brent's A-. So anyway, you had Brent as number two. I had Brent as number one. He finished as the lead champion overall, whereas you had Derek as number five, and I had Derek as number nine, mm-hmm. and he finished in second place overall.
Well, that could speak to a couple of things. One, the spread of our drafting from last year, as opposed to the proximity and tightness of this year's draft, but also the fact that drafting is not everything when it comes down to the season. It can give you a potential massive leg up, but management is much more than just your performance on day one draft.
Well, yeah, and we don't know everything on day one. Like Derek's team last year, he had Cam Newton for $6 and Devontae Freeman for $7. He drafted them at those prices, mm-hmm. and that's kind of what the analysis said they were worth at that point. But obviously they end up being worth more like $30 and $50. So, mm-hmm. You know, a lot can change from draft day to even week two of the season. So obviously this is our based on what we know now, best educated guess, certainly plenty of flux in that as the season goes on.
Truly. Well, let's get straight into it. Our pull from Fantasy Pros. Right off the get-go, we have the ability to assess team based on draft rankings, which gives us a percentile breakdown. Now, first of all, let's go ahead and be clear that of that percentile breakdown, albeit may on a curve, not being able to see the back end of their statistics, we are looking at a B+ or above ranking. None of our teams are ranked below about 87%, which is just remarkable.
Yeah. So that's the bunching that we've seen. And I'm surprised. I guess they have to give out a 100% score. I guess it forces someone to be at 100%. But you know, obviously that looks off when you see. So that makes it seem like you have a perfect team or perfect draft. But sure. Which certainly isn't the case. But yeah, it's we're all bunched together. You know, quality scores across the board.
Absolutely. Well, let's dive in to talk about assessment. We're going to go in nomination order.
Yep. So we'll start off with Scott's team. So Scott kept David Johnson, arguably, if not definitively, the best keeper value, where he was able to pay $0 for him this year, which is pretty incredible for one of the top running backs. Mm-hmm. Beyond David Johnson, he gets pretty thin at running back with Melvin Gordon and Derrick Henry as the only other running backs that he picked up, whereas he went deeper at wide receiver with 7 wide receivers led by Amari Cooper, Golden Tate, and Larry Fitzgerald as his top 3. At quarterback, he has both Russell Wilson and Eli Manning, and at tight end, he's got Zach Ertz and Miller. So overall, he spent $198 of his $200 budget. According to what I am looking at from the Fantasy Pros auction price, he got $195 worth of value out of that. So kind of a $3 shortage there, which is a real bummer when he started with a $43 surplus from his keeper. So he kind of gave all that keeper value back. The picks that sort of analysis dislikes the most is Amari Cooper, where he spent $39 for Cooper, and Fantasy Pros would value him at more $24. Mm-hmm. So overall, you know, I feel like Scott much stronger this year than he was last year. I don't think he capitalized on the value of his keeper as well as he could have. But certainly, you know, he's got a starting lineup that could beat anybody in a given week. What do you think about Scott's team overall?
Well, I do think you're right in saying his strength is in his starting lineup. He does have – he went heavy on the wide side, but that's not at all a bad strategy given that we are a PPR with a full-point league. He's got Larry Fitz, which has been a point of contention for me as I've leaned heavily into him, and he's been hot and cold for me. He's got arguably the number one or number two defense, depending on your opinion, within the Denver Broncos, who he purchased for an outstanding $4, so losing a little bit of value there, but picking up Sterling Shepard along the way, one of the stronger sleepers, argued, going into the season. So ultimately, I think that his team looks great, and I would be happy with it if it were mine. You have a thought, Bruin?
Yeah, I feel like he has, you know, good players at the wrong prices. You know, I think like Sterling Shepard, great sleeper pick, but he paid $12 for him. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, if you're paying $12 for a wide receiver, it should be like a, you know, a startable wide receiver caliber, you know? And you might say, you could argue Sterling Shepard is startable at this point. I don't think he is yet. I think maybe later on in the season. So that's the kind of pick I'd like to see for, you know, in the $5 to $8 range instead of $12. Sure. And Amari Cooper, you know, he could be $39, a $39 wide receiver, but you know, I think it's just too high, and so he didn't end up getting as many of the kind of elite players. Because he overpaid on some of the more middle of the pack
sure.
Players. So
yeah, I couldn't agree more. You're talking about having so much dollar additional going in, having Johnson on your roster from the get go for free 99. Couldn't agree more that valuation was his biggest struggle, and that I think he could have gotten a lot more bang for his buck and stacked his team. Ultimately, I think he has a good team on roster. Valuation could have been a little bit different. Ultimately, it's tough when values are subjective, and proof will be in the pudding or not. You know, we'll get into the season and we'll be able to say, oh, this player was worth that or not. Time will only tell. But from first glance, I agree. I like the team. But value, bang for buck, definitely not what it potentially could have been.
Now, Fantasy Pros, I'll reference a kind of a snapshot I took of the power rankings right after the draft. Those rankings shift around a little bit now that we're past it and some free agent moves have been made and whatnot. But Fantasy Pros had Stott's team as the number two overall team coming out of the draft. So it would give it a pretty strong 98% grade. So I have a letter grade in mind. Do you have one as well?
I do. I have an A- written down for Scott. Yep.
A- written down for Scott. Okay. Mm-hmm. I am going to go with a B- for Scott. So I think I'm the low man on that on the totem pole there. Certainly, I think Fantasy Pros would agree with your grading, maybe even A or A plus from Fantasy Pros, where you go A-, and I will go B- there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I will say that you put a large stock on value. And that always shows in your own personal draft as well, that value, bang for buck, is one of your greatest strengths. And you're also a financial analyst. And so when
to me, I feel like that's the whole point of the auction draft, is to get as many dollars worth of players as you can out of the limited amount of funds that you have. So if you're not doing that, then what are you doing?
I'm not arguing with you. I'm just saying. You might knock down a letter grade on principle.
All right. So now everyone knows where I'm coming from. We can move on. Next up is Andy's team. Andy kept Allen Robinson for $17. And then he kicked his draft off with Adrian Peterson at 47. He took Aaron Rodgers for 33. Matt Forte for 28, and then Julian Edelman for 25. So those kind of some of his top players. Overall, the Fantasy Pros dollar amount would say he got $208 worth of value out of the $200 that he spent. The pick that it loves the most, obviously, after Allen Robinson for 14, it loves Justin Forsett for $1,
sure.
Which is that's. The timing of our draft with Justin Forsett news was very interesting because he, I believe, had just been released the day before or 2 days before.
Day of, actually, Sunday morning.
Was it the day of? Okay. Mm-hmm. But then as we got closer to draft time, the news was coming out that he was expected to re-sign with Baltimore. And now as we speak today, I believe he's expected to even did significant work in week one for Baltimore. So kind of went from cut to back to still being a starter. So I think that's why Fantasy Pros loves that pitch so much for $1. Mm-hmm. So good timing for Andy there. And that's really what's generated a lot of his value. So good balanced roster here. He's got he's loaded up on wide receivers with 8 of them, 4 running backs, 1 quarterback, 1 tight end. What do you think about Andy's draft this year?
He's got a lot of studs on his team. He's got Aaron Rodgers and Adrian Peterson. Matt Forte is getting old, but he's got some pretty high compliment going into this season. A lot of upside. Justin Forsett's out for a little while, but I think that, again, he's huge value. Julian Edelman, obviously, is a great PPR addition, especially since he kind of fills that nice little slot route receiver for Brady often. He's a great target. Sanu is another sleeper that's been highlighted going into the season. So a lot of big names. Kobe Fleener, he landed Kobe Fleener. I think that was a tight end that all of us were going to be targeting. He was one of the greater hyped tight ends going in this year, and I was excited to have a run at him. He went for what I would consider to be about value, so I'm was surprised, and I think he went so late in the draft that not a lot of bucks were left to drive his value up considerably. But I know that I ran out of money and wasn't going to be able to go after him near the end. But I really like Fleener. He looks good this year, especially considering Breeze's propensity to throw touchdown passes to his tight end. So I like his team. I don't dislike it. I don't think it has really what it needs in the long run, though. And the consideration is, of course, depth. As I'm thinking about that, I think that he can field a great starting lineup, but I think if he has more than two injuries, that his team falls apart.
Yeah, I mean, I think if anyone has more than two injuries, they're going to fall apart. But I actually really like his running backs. You know, Adrian Peterson's probably the most dependable of all the stud running backs, whereas the kind of the other studs are rookies or second-year players, and not sure exactly what you're going to get out of them, what their workload's going to be. But Adrian Peterson, he's the guy, right? And then he's got Matt Forte and Rashad Jennings and Justin Forsett, who I feel like all are late risers in the towards the end of training camp. Forte and Rashad Jennings are benefiting from other running backs getting cut who could have taken some goal line work for them being cut from their team's rosters, and so now they're kind of back in line for that goal line work that looked mm-hmm. questionable at the beginning. And then Forsett obviously coming back onto Baltimore, so I kind of like all four of his running backs there. I feel like they're kind of oldies but goodies, all of them. You know, it's not just drafting the best players from 2009. They actually, have, legitimate paths to lots of touchdown opportunities, which, you obviously want to get that from your running backs.
Right.
After those top two wide receivers, it's a little thin, but he's got enough candidates to pop that someone should be able to fill that third wide receiver slot for him.
Yeah.
So I actually really like his team. Fantasy Pros didn't love it. Had it as a 93% grade, number 8 in the lead, so kind of in the middle to bottom of the middle third of the lead. However, I'm going to throw a B+ on this draft for Andy myself.
That is exactly what I had written down for Andy, was a B+.
All right.
The biggest tick against Andy's team, and I would imagine that this is possibly the percentile or the reason for the knock on Fantasy Pros, is because of his wide core, especially in a PPR league. I don't think of Julian Edelman as a number one ride on your roster. I think of him as a number two.
Allen Robinson is the number one, though. So, he's got Edelman as his number two. Question mark for me on Edelman, because I think injuries are mounting up a little bit, and that, might manifest itself. Plus Brady being out the first four games, that hurts his value too. But Edelman can still be a player who goes out and catches 6 to 8 passes a game, certainly.
Sure. With that, I don't see Robinson on my roster for him. I must have missed that on the on the plugin. So I'm looking at Edelman and Corey Coleman,
yep,
and Kevin White and
Dorsett. Allen Robinson goes straight to the top. So yep.
I don't have Robinson on my list.
I'll make him look a lot better for you.
Well, there you go. I'm looking at the spreadsheet that Grayson was running for me. Apparently, he missed one.
Oh yeah, now that you bring him up, I feel like we should recap Grayson's involvement in the draft at this point. I don't want to touch on a sensitive subject or anything like that, because I know you got a little bit of ribbing on draft day. I want to check on you and see if it was an appropriate amount of ribbing, and really just how you felt your system with Grayson worked overall.
Well, first of all, I was asking for the ribbing. I mean, truly, the amount of overkill that I put into it. I mean, come on, it wouldn't be fun if I wasn't getting ribbing for bringing my weight and monitors, and not to mention a little bit of glamour wear. Which, speaking of, though you cannot see us right now, I can see Peter. And he is rocking his TNR T-shirt with Elwood number 3 represented.
That's right. This will be our podcast in this T-shirt every week now.
Excellent. Well,
it's a pretty awesome shirt.
It is an awesome shirt. Yeah. No. Thanks for repping. Now, granted, that is TNR proper. Of course, that T-shirt represents our podcast, not my team. Although I'll take it as a kindness and a nod that you're repping my team in the same vein. But I did get a little bit of ribbing for it. I think that my draft held up enough that nobody could doubt that I didn't know what I was doing, and that it wasn't necessarily, all talk, all show. having Grayson there, but it actually benefited me in the long run to have the system that we worked. We practiced pretty good at it. We got the flow down. We knew what we were doing and how we were doing it, and I think it paid off for me. I was able to accomplish the plan that I set out to do.
All right. Now, if you go on to win the championship, I do wonder if we're going to see a lot of copycatting going on, and we have many other guests to our draft in future years, to which I say bring it on, you know, more more bodies in the room, the more fun, right? We'll just make sure we can accommodate for it.
Well, when you think about it, we've been on this natural trajectory of up and to the right in terms of our skill, our competition factor, just the level of preparation. And I don't see that trajectory changing anytime soon. I think that we are only going to get sharper, stronger, and we have to strive for that next level. I mean, for a while it was, you know, way back when we started the auction draft, it was having a budget was a big deal. And then having a spreadsheet to run that budget, and then having multiple spreadsheets and coding your own even, or, you know, starting to get into different layers of research. Different processes, different experimentation, different plans. Like, there has always been the next factor that's driven our game onward and upward. And I think maybe consultation in the live draft, maybe a layer that we might see continue to advance. We'll see.
Now, we just have to make sure the consultant is a friend with little fantasy football knowledge like Grayson. He's the perfect consultant and assistant. But if anyone starts, you know, bring in a ringer from some expert site, I'm going to start to take some issue.
And maybe we have the candidacy rules. Derek and I were describing, we're getting off topic here, but Derek and I were describing what I call the waiting list for our fantasy football league. I have several friends, coworkers, as well as acquaintances that have listened to TNR podcasts that have checked in on our fantasy football league that ask me often about how things are going and on occasion beg to be a part of our league. And that's flattering because there's a lot of value and competition in our league. But because of that, Derek pointed out that we couldn't just let anybody hop in. One, we need to be protective of the quality of our league. Two, we don't want to completely crush somebody who comes out of the woodwork and has never done an auction draft before and couldn't keep up with the degree of which we prep and play at. So Derek proposed a degree of application and committee approval for those who would join our league in the future. And we started brainstorming a few ideas. And I really like the sound of having an on-ramp for future Pellwood League participants with a little bit of an approval process.
So what you're headed towards then is a minor league system for our fantasy football league where they can practice and play in the, really it'd be like a relegation system, mm-hmm. European football, where if you finish in the, say, lower third of the league, you get relegated down to the sub league.
Sure.
And if you finish in the top four of the sub league, then you get bumped up to the big leagues and actually have a shot at the prize.
That's right. And maybe, you know, I like the idea of having a mock draft that we all watch. Like, it's tryouts. You know, they have to, the applicants have to compete against one another in a mock draft, and we look into it, and that's part of their application process. There's a world of things we can do. Anyway, we don't have that problem now because we've got plenty of loyalists who have stuck with the league for the long haul, and I hope they continue to do so as we continue to add value to it. Back to our evaluation of our teams, though. I was finishing the point on Andy's wides before I actually knew every one of the wides he had. I will still say I think he overpaid, and so value went down a little bit there, and that's part of my ranking for him on those wides. But there you go.
All right.
Good team overall. He was very fierce. Andy was one of my I wouldn't call him a nemesis by any means, but I found myself anytime I was targeting a player, he was right there with me. And
I think he also price enforced on a lot of players that he didn't get too. So
yeah. Andy has historically hated the defense and kicker nomination early in the draft as well.
Indeed.
That bothers him immensely, which I don't really care because I landed, you know, the number one kicker and the, arguably the number one defense in that strategy, and I'm going to try to get the best team I can, so I'm not going to apologize for it. But I also understand it's one of those unwritten rules, kind of like baseball, that it's a little bit of a jib.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like you don't bunt on the pitcher when he's got a no-hitter going.
That's right. If you
nominate a kicker or defense prior to taking three or four players of your own, there's some shaming involved. Sure.
I recognize that the shaming is warranted. I'm just not going to stop. All right. Moving on to Ben's team, I believe.
Got Derek first, actually. Don't skip Derek.
Oh, man, this spreadsheet is wacky.
All right.
Grayson.
All right, so Derek kept Devontae Freeman for $7, good keeper there. Interestingly, he spent $181 of his $200 budget, leaving $19 on the table. And then we didn't even play poker after the draft was over, so we didn't even get to,
multiply it out.
Put that $19 to good use. So that has just gone to waste, lost in the wind, $19 of opportunity never to be brought back.
Well, to be fair, I did buy his monster burrito after I lost the bet on the dot race at the ballpark.
Oh, hey, you can't talk about that, man. They say it at the ballpark. No wagering, please. You can't broadcast.
Well, the number one rule about Dot Race Fight Club.
Yeah, you don't talk about the Dot Race. It became like a running joke during the auction draft. Derek felt like he was winning if he had the most money left over, and he won in the end. You know, he had the most money left over by far. So
but did it translate into a strong team?
Congratulations to Derek on that. Actually, he did end up with a strong team, and interestingly, using my my dollar evaluation system, he had the most surplus value overall.
Wow.
Where he spent $181 and got $199 worth of value out of it.
Right.
So he's plus 18, which is the most out of anyone. He just should have spent more
to get
even better players and increase the total value of his team even more. So, good job there. Highest percent rate of return, just the lowest initial investment. So he spent big on running back. He's got Mark Ingram for $40 to complement Devontae Freeman. And then he went with some, very solid kind of middle tier wide receivers of Eric Decker, DeSean Jackson, Emmanuel Sanders, and John Brown. I don't see any, clear studs out of those group, out of that group. A lot of kind of wide receiver two, wide receiver three candidates. And then he just kind of went for some good depth behind that at quarterback position, tight end position, and then he handcuffed Devontae Freeman at running back with Tevin Coleman, and has the high upside of arguably high upside of Arian Foster at a reasonable discount for Arian Foster given his historical performance on the field. So.
Sure.
Lots of good players there. Overall, I like the value he got out of the draft, but I do think it's a pretty bad mistake to leave $18 or $19 unspent.
And if he were here, he would argue with you. But
I don't know. I think he regretted it after the draft immediately. I think he realized that he could have upgraded one of his wide receivers, like turned DeSean Jackson into Dez Bryant or something like that. So, I think that's a pretty big difference.
Sure.
In the total draft outcome. What's you?
Well, I think that he nailed the trifecta. You're right in saying that would be my one comment is that he could have nabbed a wide with that extra cash. But other than that, I mean, his running backs have got to be one of the top setups in our league this year, at least on paper. Honestly, I think when it comes to the grade that I have for him, it's based not only on the value that he got, but also the depth that he has. His depth goes all the way through his bench, and that's what made him successful last year. I think it'll make him successful this year. And with a couple of strategic moves, maybe a trade here or there to take some of that value that he didn't use in his draft, but maybe trade up for a stronger wide, and he'll have a top-tier team. I give him an A.
You are giving him an A, where Fantasy Pros had him as a the number 5 team in the league out of 12. I'm going to give him a B. So I am a full letter grade below you on Derek for the second year in a row. Didn't work out so well for me last year. We'll see what happens this year.
All right.
Next up is Ben. And Ben kept Odell Beckham Jr. for $26. So nice when you can take, you know, you can keep one of the top three wide receivers. And then he spent big on Ezekiel Elliott for $53, buying into the rookie sensation for the Cowboys to have a big year. You know, that kind of sucks most of Elliott's possible keeper value out. Whereas, you know, rookie running back, maybe you did him at a discount this year and then did value out of him next year, especially behind the Cowboys' offensive line. But I think all of that hype and all of the homerism of Cowboys fans in our league took that value out of Elliott. He also spent big on Jarvis Landry for $40. And I don't remember at what point in the draft this was. That feels a little bit high for Jarvis Landry, who is excellent at as a PPR wide receiver. But I don't know if he is a $40 option, considering some of the other wide receivers who are going for $40. So we'll see how that one plays out. Dollar-wise, that pick is not loved by Fantasy Pros. And then not long after that, he didn't have a whole lot of money left. Ben had the most roster spots open towards the end of the draft, and so he filled it with a bunch of $1 players, which is hard to be super impressed by any of those players. So he's really a top-end heavy team. So the question is, did he get the right studs to fill that top end, and will they carry him to success this season?
I want to say yes, but I don't think I'm very confident in that. Like, I mean, he's got Travis Kelce, he's got a strong tight end, he's got obviously Julio Jones up top, which is expensive but great in our league. I wrote down my grade for him as a C+, and the reason that I gave him a C+ is I think it's above average team because of the studs that he has, but it felt like near the end, the Jarvis Landry pick was that he realized that he wasn't strong, and he tried to throw money at who was left, and that was why why he snagged him. And then the remainder of his picks just demonstrated that of us, even though he had done a little bit of homework, he probably, if we were to have to rank those who had prepared, I think he probably came least prepared, and it did feel a little bit like he was throwing darts at the wall while he was picking up his bench.
Yeah, I'm going to go with a C- grade for Ben. Fantasy Pros actually gave him the lowest grade in the league. You know, and like the Landry pick is a little confusing to me. It wasn't super late in the draft. As I'm looking at it, you know, T.Y. Hilton went later, Kelvin Benjamin went later, Golden Tate, Michael Floyd, Brandon Cooks, Eric Decker, Doug Baldwin, all these players went later. And Hilton was the only one who went for the same kind of $40 level. So I feel like there were still options at the wide receiver position out there. And so that one, I think he got into a bidding war and got pot committed and just didn't want to lose. So I think that hurts him. That hurt the rest of his team. But Ben somehow finds a way to be competitive the rest of the season some way or another. But for now, it's a C- on the draft for me.
Okay.
All right. Next up is myself. I kept Brandon Marshall for $15. I spent the most money for Le'Veon Bell for $48, and then Dez Bryant for $41. After that, I did not pay over $20 for a player. Filled in my wide receivers with Michael Floyd, my running backs with Frank Gore, Giovanni Bernard, and Duke Johnson. I got Big Ben at quarterback, and then you know, kind of low value players from there. So dollar wise, it says for the $200 I spent, $212 of value. The Fantasy Pros dollar breakout doesn't love Le'Veon Bell for $48, values him at $36, but for the most part, I feel like I got value out of most of my picks. Mm-hmm. We're paying less than what they're really worth. So I'm happy with that. I do feel like the beginning of the season is going to be a struggle for me with both. I have Le'Veon Bell and Josh Gordon suspended for the first three and four games respectively. So that will that'll be tough. So I will hope for one victory out of my first 3 weeks, and then hopefully those guys come back as mega studs like they can be.
Mm-hmm. Well, according to Fantasy Pros, depending on what it wants to show when you click it, because it's a little bit of a variable each time. I think it runs different probability instances each time you look at the rankings. But depending on when you refresh it, it either puts you at number one or number two at the top of our rankings based on your draft. And I think the reason is twofold. I think it's because you've got exceptional wides and you got exceptional value in your draft. So of the things that you value, you hit it right on the head. In fact, I would give you the A that I have written down for you, if nothing more than you are very, very proficient at working your plan and strategy.
Yeah, I know. I came away with this not loving my team. I liked the value I got on my players. I don't love my team. I feel like I'm kind of missing a starting wide receiver, and my running backs are barely startable to start the season. So once Le'Veon Bell comes back, obviously that changes a lot of things on my outlook for my team. So I'm going to go with a B+ for myself, I think. I have a hard time giving myself it right now just because running back looks so weak. And there's not a ton of players that I love. So I allowed myself to get priced out of the players that I love a lot of times. And so good on paper, good in my head, don't really love it in my heart. So I'm going to stick with a B+.
I will. It's worth noting that of the draft, I usually walk away with what I consider to be my one mistake. Like, what is my one mistake from this draft? And I had discussed, like, there were a couple, really two names that I'd written down for tight end that I was going to target, and Julius Thomas was one of them. And I had him valued at $8, and I was willing to go to $8 on him. And I looked up, and not knowing that he had been nominated, and just missed it there at the end, and heard that voice go sold on $2, and that was my mistake, was if not price enforcing, let alone having a run at Julius Thomas, and then I personally didn't end up with my favorite tight end. So well done on that snipe.
I was going to go to $8 on him too, so I probably would have...
First one there would have won, huh?
Yeah, first one. I probably would have given up at $8, so I was happy to get him for $2.
Well, since you nominated him, and if we'd have done dollar increment, I guess that would have been mine. So thanks for rubbing that salt in the wound.
I usually walk away with feeling like I made one mistake too. If I had one this year, I'd say it would be Le'Veon Bell, because I did not go into the draft planning to draft him. And that's the kind of player where I feel like he needs to be in your game plan or not before you go into the draft.
Fair enough.
Suspended for the first three games.
Right.
But he can be so good in a PPR that I'm okay with that being my one mistake, as long as he comes back after 3 weeks and returns to being that kind of stud level. So we'll see what happens there.
But, on the front end.
You know, I don't have a Trent Richardson regret at this point right now.
Fair enough.
Like I have had in past years. So
now, can I go ahead and ask, did you plan on drafting Ben Roethlisberger from the get-go? Was he part of your strategy, or was he kind of a, man, that's a quarterback available, I'll take him?
That was, I slotted in my budget. I want to spend about $4 on a quarterback. And, hey, look, Ben's there for $4 right now. I'll bid $5, see what, and then I'll be done after that. Didn't really plan on bidding anymore, and then I won him for $5. So ended up being, I think, good value there. Even if I don't love him like you claim that I do, I really don't.
You keep drafting him.
I swear this is the first time I've owned him in 6 years, and but every year you call him out as my favorite quarterback whenever he's up on the block.
Yeah, I just think it's funny.
Yeah, it's a nice running joke that has no foundation.
that's why it's funny to me, because it's always funny to listen to you defend something without a foundation.
Yes. Yeah. It doesn't make sense. Why would you think that?
it's funny to make you defend it, even if it's not true. Yes. All right. Well, let's move on to Ben, I think, is next.
Now we're done, Ben. Now we're on to Brock.
I was trying to say Brock. I'm looking at the order here. Let me make sure I have this correct then, because I'm looking at a broken spreadsheet. If I remember right, we've got Brock, and then I think there's another team.
And Michael,
Jared,
Brian,
and then
Chris, you, Brent.
Chris, me, and Brent. Okay, cool. Yep. All right, I got it. Let's hit it.
All right. But we're on Brock now. All right, so Brock kept DeAndre Hopkins with the $33, the most expensive keeper at wide receiver. He followed that up by drafting Julio Jones for $61. So he spent a lot of money on his top two wide receivers. Followed that up by spending $29 on Jeremy Maclin. So right there, you know, he has spent $123 on three players, all of which at wide receiver, clearly investing heavily at wide receiver. And ended up with the best wide receiver core in the league for sure. He's a little bit light at running back. It starts with DeMarco Murray. It goes down to he's at D'Angelo Williams for the first 3 weeks, pretty good. And he's at Chris Ivory and Darren Sproles after that. After week three, we'll see how it looks, but it might be looking pretty thin at running back for Brock. He has Travis Kelce at tight end. I like that pick at tight end. And he has that Kirk Cousins at quarterback. Not a sexy pick, but certainly can be good enough, especially for the $3 he spent on them.
Sure.
So overall, he spent $200, and it looks like he got $197 worth of value out of it. So about break even. What say you about this very wide receiver heavy team?
Well, he knew what he was doing, knew what he was going for, and made the most of it for the rest of his team. I mean, he ended up with a great tight end, a great kicker, a good defense, and his wide core is number one. So, and I don't dislike his running backs. Like you said, the depth across his team isn't the strongest, and that's probably his biggest weakness, I think. I like Kirk Cousins a lot. There's been a lot of hype on him going into this season. He was going to be one of two options for me if I were able to get Tom Brady. I was going to need, you know, a four-week filler, and that was going to be Cousins or maybe Derek Carr or even Joe Flacco this year, so one of three. But I do like him, and I think that overall between – DeAndre Hopkins and Julio Jones, I think he's going to have maybe a couple of weeks with really big boards, but I think he's going to be inconsistent week to week.
Yeah, I kind of fear the mega hype quarterbacks, because last year the mega hype quarterbacks were Sam Bradford,
mm-hmm.
Teddy Bridgewater, Ryan Tannehill, and they all were not great. So I kind of like the proven guys at quarterback a lot more than the hype guys. But Cousins did have a good year last year, especially towards the end of it, so it might be okay. I think the lack of the running back foundation will hurt. I think I would have liked to see him pick up like one or even two more running backs, especially because he was so thin there, just to try to hit a lottery ticket. As opposed to kind of continue to end up with six wide receivers when you've got three that you know you're going to be starting every week. I feel like that's a little bit of overkill on wide receivers when you know you're weak at running back. So I'm going to give him a B. Mm-hmm. Fantasy Pros had him as the number three team immediately following the draft. So Fantasy Pros loving those wide receivers. What say you?
Grade?
Yep. Check.
My grade was a B+.
B+. All right. So we're pretty close there. All right. Next up is Michael. Michael, welcome to the draft. It was wonderful to have you with us. He kept CJ Anderson for $1. So starting off with $199 available to him, he spent $198. He got $201 of value out of it. Kicked his draft off very nicely by taking Rob Gronkowski for $33. This was the very first player on the block, which I thought was a strange choice to be the first player up on the block. But I guess it kind of sets the tone for what the tight end landscape is going to look like. And
fair enough.
Michael pounced early, and I think some bidding fingers were a little slow to wake up, a little hesitant to commit, as men do sometimes, you know, or not so sure about that commitment. Mm-hmm. And Gronkowski went for 33, yep. Which seems like that's good value there.
Great.
He then spent 58 on Lamar Miller and 48 on Alshon Jeffrey, both of which are great players. Not sure if they're worth that level of investment, but time will tell. So he's at least got a solid top six players, as he also picked up Andrew Luck, mm-hmm. Who it seems like is poised for a kind of breakout year, or at least return to health and being really good and throwing a lot. And he's also got Doug Baldwin to kind of round up that top six of his certainly a studs and
absolutely
maybe duds team. So sure.
No, this is what I expect a studs and dud team to look like when it's executed. Yep. Well, when you compare it to Brock's team, you could argue that he went studs and duds based on dollars spent where, but since he's full wides, he has like a, you know, a hybrid, whereas this team is a little bit more balanced positionally but still has those highs and lows. So definitely a well-executed studs and duds, in my opinion. And, I mean, you look at his studs. He's got, you know, one of the top quarterbacks, and he even picked up a great backup quarterback in the mix of that, and that there's tons of hype around Winston going in this year, too. So not a bad execution. I've tried this strategy before and failed miserably. And so I think that in a PPR league, depth has proven to matter a lot, at least to me. He did get the value where he was. I think your point on the tight end up front kind of shocked us, and we were not surprising that. I think he was totally intentional on that, and that was a very good move on his part to snake value out of one of the top 10, you know, point valuers in the league early on, because nobody wants to commit too many dollars on a tight end, let alone the first pick. So
yep.
I felt like that was a great strategic move.
Yeah, I certainly saw in there as a value, and I just was thinking I didn't plan to spend this much at tight end. That would totally screw up my plan, and yeah. And so I just didn't bring myself to bid that up any higher. So yeah, I think he definitely got a kind of found a market inefficiency there, yeah, right off the bat. So really solid pick.
I also wanted to comment on our league evaluation overall. This year, and I think maybe it had to do with everybody doing their homework and not just going off of plain, you know, name recognition. But it, to me, it felt like quarterbacks were finally a little bit more evenly valued across our league, in that they went for what I expected them to go for instead of going up into the upper stratosphere like they have in the past. Did you notice that?
Yeah, for sure. I think I was surprised to see Aaron Rodgers go for 33. I think he led the quarterbacks in cost. Cam Newton went for 33 as well. So I think those two were the highest prices paid, which is not so bad, especially for, you know, those kinds of quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. So we've seen them go for 45 or 50 before. So yeah, I definitely think there has been a shift in the education and outlook and expectation for quarterbacks.
Yeah. Anyway, but ultimately, I felt like this was a great execution. I don't think that long run his team will hold out, because I've seen the balance work out better for him. But I doubt he expects to stay that way. He's got some great trade power. So I'm a fan of the execution of the strategy, even though if it's not my favorite strategy. Fantasy Pros is not, however. They put him at team number 12, but they still gave him an 86.9% because of the strength of some of his positions. I personally gave him a B- because I don't think that he has longevity unless he makes some moves.
Yeah, I'm going to give him a B myself. You know, he's really just missing a wide receiver three right now from his starters, and he does have some running back depth issues. But I do like the studs that are leading his team. He has done this before where he's got studs leading his team, but he's got like two studs, and this year he's got six. So, you know, I think it'll be a much stronger year for Michael.
Yeah, agreed.
All right, next up is Jared. Jared, in his second year in the league, second time doing the auction draft with us, I think he got a little, you know, he's sharp fantasy player for sure, but I think he was a little bit drinking out of a fire hydrant with a straw in last year's draft, and came much more prepared this year and had a much stronger showing. So he kept Jordy Nelson for $3. You know, great keeper pick there. I think it was your favorite when we podcasted last week. And then he took Jamaal Charles and LaShawn McCoy as his top two running backs, and then filled out wide receivers with Keenan Allen and Dante Moncrief. He took Antonio Gates at tight end and Tyrod Taylor at quarterback. And then beyond that, he's got some pretty good depth options at both running back and wide receiver. I really like his bench. I think he loaded up on some of the kind of the I guess I don't know if they're the kind of most common sleeper picks out there, but certainly some good handcuffs and also some good opportunity for guys to grow into roles and produce good value. So I really like Jared's team. I think he did a great job, and I think the biggest question mark to me is Jamaal Charles, but he did a great job of handcuffing him with Spencer Ware. So he's got the Kansas City running back, whoever it may be. Just as long as they avoid a complete timeshare, then he's in good shape. So I'm a big fan of Jared's team. Fantasy Pros had it as number four immediately following the draft when I looked at it. So what do you think?
I love his team, and I felt like he, on draft day, just carried himself so well and marched down into a tried and true, very consistent, steady, by the book draft. I was really, really impressed with Jared in his draft. He just did a really good job and really owned it very, very well. And, you know, he landed a great, great balanced strategy team. And I think it looks great. Overall, the depth that he has looks really good. The planning that went into his depth, and then he was able to target and execute that, just demonstrates that he thought really hard about his plan. And he pulled it off, and that's impressive. Really, really good job on his part.
I'm going to give him an A. Yeah. How about you?
I give him an A.
All right. Good job, Jared.
Well done, Jared.
You've got yourself an A to start the season. All right, next up is Brian. Brian kept Matthew Stafford for $2. and then he also took Cam Newton for $33. So that was an interesting the keeper itself was interesting, and then certainly spending $33 at quarterback at the same position was even more intriguing as well. But then he also took Antonio Brown, best player to have. It's super fun to own Antonio Brown. It covers up a lot of other sins, for sure. So after that, though, it's a little light. He's got Carlos Hyde and Jeremy Hill at running back. Allen Hurns and Devontae Parker round out, and Tyler Lockett round out the wide receivers. And then it's kind of some sleeper picks after that. Pretty good choices at on the bench for the $1 and $2 selections. But I think it's a top heavy team with Antonio Brown, and then the dollar spent at quarterback as well. Overall, numbers say he got $206 worth of value out of the $200 that he spent, so that's pretty good. Best pick, according to this, was Carlos Hyde for $16, valued closer to $27. So anytime you hit the that kind of the clear number one running back for $16, you're living right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's kind of an anomaly for me in looking at his team. Brian is a really sharp fantasy player, and you know, he had some tough luck last year, but he had a middle of the road upper level season, and you know, I was looking forward to figuring out his strategy, but I know he has one in terms of Matt Stafford, but then also picking up Cam Newton was a little confusing, and whether or not he's planning on playing him this week, I'm not sure. Given that, I think positionally he's a little weaker than he needs to be when it comes to wides and RBs, but he's got Antonio Brown to make up for that on the top end. So I'm very curious to see how his team performs. I'm not really sure quite how to evaluate or take it, because it's not really a team that I would personally assemble. So I wrote down a B for him.
All right. I've got a B minus, and Fantasy Pros has him as number 10 in the league. So we're in the same boat.
Yeah.
All right, next up is Chris. We got three teams to go. Chris kept Todd Gurley for $16. Then he took a very balanced approach, spending between $11 and $35 really for the next eight players that he took. So he's got Greg Olsen, a tight end. His wide receivers are Brandon Cooks, Randall Cobb, Kelvin Benjamin. He's got Tom Brady and Matt Ryan at quarterback. And then as a kind of second running back is Jeremy Langford and Matt Jones after that. So he's got a lot of certainly balanced is definitely – we've seen studs and duds, and now we are seeing a full balanced approach here. After that, followed up with a lot of $1 players to round out the rest of the bench. I like balance. I do like a lot of the picks that he made. The one thing it's really missing to me is the clear stud that's going to carry the team week in and week out. I've had very balanced teams like this before, and I feel like it's just it limits the upside, and it's hard to generate a 200-point week when you don't have those big studs. So, what do you think?
I think he nailed the balance approach. I think that he would argue his studs obviously are in Tom Brady coming back in week four, and is it week four or five? He's got week five. And, he's got Matt Ryan to fill in the blank for him in the middle, but he's also got Todd Gurley on top as a running back. He's got a lot of great starters. When I look at his team, obviously he got a little bit of value out of his keeper in Greg Olsen, but I did not anticipate the tight end demand that we were going to face in the draft. And I think that it was a really brilliant move to hold on to his tight end when he did. I really like that keeper. He got Christine Michael, and that was another hyped sleeper for the year. I'm excited to see how he does. But beyond that, I don't love his bench. And so I think that his ultimate difficulty will be making do with the starters that he has without a ton of depth.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, and that is certainly the case. But he has enough to fill up the starting lineup, and then if he can just stay active on the waiver wire and in trades, he can make.
Yeah,
he's trying to get the Fowler power to do it, and he doesn't have to be married to any of his bench guys, and can drop options as they present themselves.
Super competitive drafter. I was upset that I lost Tom Brady to him, but I was enjoyed going toe-to-toe with him. But I like his team. I like his starters. So I wrote down B-plus for him.
I'm going to give him a B. Go slightly under. I think the wide receivers, I just don't love Cobb or Benjamin. I do like Cooks, but not sure about Cobb and Benjamin. They could both bounce back here, but disappointments last year are ringing in my head.
Fair enough.
All right, you are up next, sir.
That's right. Well, I mean, what can we say, really?
you kept Sammy Watkins for $11, and then you filled out the rest of your wide receivers with A.J. Green and T.Y. Hilton. Running backs are Eddie Lacy and Latavius Murray, with Carson Palmer at the quarterback helm and Dwayne Allen at tight end. Beyond that, you picked up a plethora of running backs and wide receivers on the bench. I like all of your bench picks at both running back and wide receiver. I think you got some good handcuffs there, guys who are going to step up into good roles if the starter goes down. And then wide receiver, you got a couple of guys who could kind of pop and break out for you this year. So my one critique would be, I think for the studs that you picked up, I think you overspent a little bit on A.J. Green and Eddie Lacy and T.Y. Hilton.
Yep.
Good players, just feel like you overpaid for those three, spending a total of $141 there. I really like those players. I'm not sure if they're worth the.
That was my biggest self critique, was that I overpaid, no doubt about it. And that's where my self criticism kicks in. I really was excited about my bench this year, and I've never actually been excited about a bench before because I've never done as much research as I did into the depth, because that's where the competition level is. You got to be able to pick through 16 and make it count. And I felt really good about that. But yes, I was limited in the end because I had overpaid in a couple spots on the wides. But to say it was worth it, I can't yet. But I do really like the look of my starters. So,
were you intending to go studs and duds?
Nope.
That's how it ended up.
Well, yeah, I don't. I mean, I look. The only dud that I really feel like I have on my starting lineup. I mean, you could argue Crowell is more of a sleeper potential in my flex right now. Dwayne Allen is a dud in my opinion. I don't love my tight end, but other than that, I feel really good about the. I mean, I guess you're comparing it to my bench, but I like the potential of it. So. No, it wasn't.
Yeah, I just mean that you basically spent all your money
on the starting lineup.
Yeah, the starting lineup, sure. and very little on the bench.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. No, I was planning on targeting, going for value through the rest of my picks and trying to pick up some really smart bench players, not just random, but really intentional bench players based on handcuffs or what I had seen potentially as number twos. I wasn't planning on Carson Palmer as a quarterback, but when he became available and for the value that he was, I was excited to grab him. Thought it was a good snag for the look of my team, so we'll see how that goes. But definitely my number one pursuit was a strong wide core, and I think I nailed it.
Yep, certainly. A.J. Green, T.Y. Hilton, Sammy Watkins, that's very salty. Mm-hmm. All right, let's see. Fantasy Pros, they put you at number 9 in what I pulled. I'm going to give you a B myself.
Well, thank you very much. I wrote down B+ and knocked myself for overpaying, and then knocked myself down in grades because I didn't want to give myself an A-. I'm humble.
Yeah. Just ask me how humble I am.
Yeah, please. I'll go on and on. That takes us to Britt, I believe.
Yep. Last but not least, our returning champion from last year.
What a player.
Brent kept Jordan Reed at tight end for $0. He then went for some Tampa Bay players at the top of his list with Doug Martin and Mike Evans. He then got Demaryius Thomas and Jordan Matthews. And to fill out his wide receivers, and then Ryan Matthews and Danny Woodhead to fill out the running backs. Drew Brees is his quarterback, and then he went for some nice PPR running backs on the bench and some kind of oldies but goodies in Pierre Garçon and Kenny Stills at wide receiver bench options. Of the $200 he spent, Fantasy Pros says he got $187 worth of value, so this is really one of the lower, actually, dollar value teams we've seen. I think Ben was the lowest at 181, and then Brent's coming in at second lowest at 187. According to the Fantasy Pros draft grade, he's number 7 team in the league. What do you think about Brent's draft this year?
I think Brent accomplished what he meant to do in his draft. I think his team, in terms of starters versus bench, actually is really comparable to my approach, honestly. So that's not a pat on my back, but I really think that the ratio of starters to bench players, as well as strategic benching, was kind of his goal. Picking up Deion Lewis was smart. I like a lot of his players. I do think he overpaid for a couple of them, but I think he would say that I was talking to him a little bit on the drive home from the draft, and we were talking about the intensity of it and how he had a really hard time because he was locked into the targeting of the draft. And that's where I was last year. And I felt like when I was targeting, I just got a little flustered when I couldn't land my targets. And we were talking about that and how much more freeing it is and how much more strategic it is to have a range of options and then to grab for value as opposed to go for one specific target and then get flustered when you don't get them. So I'm not sure where he ended up landing on that, but I know how you feel about Doug Martin. I know how we all feel about Danny Woodhead. Mike Evans, Demaryius Thomas, Jordan Matthews as a wide core is really solid. It's not the top, but it's definitely, he's got an above average team for sure on his starting lineup. I don't think his bench is nearly as strategic as it could be, but there are some players in there that I like. So ultimately, I gave Brent a B for a good team.
You know, there's just no one sexy on his team, right? I mean, you look at, I don't know, just the names. I mean, just Doug Martin, Ryan Matthews, Danny Woodhead at running back, Mike Evans, Demaryius Thomas, Jordan Matthews at wide receiver. It's like these have all been good players at some point in their careers, but there's not sexy picks this year. Mm-hmm. And I feel like he overpaid for a couple of them. But on the other hand, we see these kinds of players turn into valuable contributors every year, like Brandon Marshall did last year, where it's a name that you know, it's been around a long time. And he just goes, and then at the end of the season, you look back and say, why did he go for so little? You know, he's a good player. Why did he go for so little? And I think that's what we might see with Brent's team. I think, I'm going to say, put it on record that Demaryius Thomas is my 2016 version of Brandon Marshall,
okay.
Where he's going to end up having a really good season. And we're going to wonder why he went for $25, at the end of it. So, no, just a non-sexy team. Solid foundation. You know, Brent, I'm sure, is going to be very active on the waiver wire. I think last year he crushed the draft so hard that I'm a little disappointed by this year, but I also know he was much more prepared last year than he was this year, and I think it showed. But still, he's a strong player and is going to be just fine. But for the draft, I'm going to give him a C+.
All right. We love you, Brent.
All right, that does it. We are done. So let me just do some quick tallying here.
All right.
You gave out 3 A's and 1 A-. So the 3 A's were to Derek, Pete, and Jared. You gave an A- to Scott. You gave B+ to Andy, Brock, Chris, Seth. A B to Brent and Brian, and a B- to Michael, and a C+ to Ben. I only gave out 1 A, and that's to Jared. Then I gave out B+ to Andy and Pete, and then I gave out Bs to Derek, Brock, Michael, Chris, and Seth, a B- to Brian and Scott, and then a C+ to Brent and a C- to Ben. So I feel like for me, I had a hard time giving out an A. Jared is the one and only I gave out. Also had a hard time giving out lots of C's, which I think just reflects the kind of bunching of skill and the outcome of the draft. This is what I expected my grading to look like, where it's just a lot of B's. B+, and I think it's gonna be a great year. I'm really excited about this season. It's always competitive. We always have a team that's like 6-7 that sneaks into the playoffs. This year I expect to be no different, and I expect we'll be getting to the final week of the regular season, and there's gonna be a potential, you know, there's gonna be like 16 different playoff scenarios. So I'm excited. It's gonna be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I agree. When I was ranking earlier this evening, one of the goals that I had was to try to do my best to put it on a little bit of a bell curve to create some spread. And I did that by evaluating a few more elements of minutia within the team to try to create more of a spread between the A's and the C's. But you're right. The grouping is tight, and it's going to be a real close race. In fact, it might be such that, you know, we actually have to depend on the performance of the NFL players themselves and not our own management.
That's crazy.
Imagine that. So we'll see what that looks like. I'm looking forward to the community and camaraderie that it'll bring. Specifically, you know, y'all know I've been in a bit of a honeymoon phase with my new smoker grill that I got this summer. I've been grilling about 5 times a week. And I'm looking forward to rolling a flat screen and some tailgating chairs out front my driveway, along with my grill and some cornhole and a cooler, and inviting my neighbors over to track and watch the NFL with me on Sunday evenings or Monday evenings, just to try to build a little bit more community and maybe build a little bit more envy as to the Pelwood Fantasy Football League as well.
That's awesome.
you know, get that, get that pool of potential applicants for future members up.
So why don't you just go ahead and move up here a little closer and then do that, and I think it'll be perfect.
Okay. All right, I could offer the same to you if you just down here.
Yeah, right.
I make some mean ribs, man. Well, I hope, hope this episode has been all that it was hyped up to be, our annual grading of the draft. I cannot say enough, guys, how impressed I was with all of us. And that is not a pretentious, lofty statement, because I know I have bombed the draft on more than one occasion. So hear me when I say this was a good draft, and all of us were in there neck and neck, and that was fun. Just a fun day. So thanks for sacrificing if you had to make your way to get with us, or to, you know, your families had to give you up. Derek nearly missed the birth of his niece for such an event. I'm not convinced that he wasn't encouraging the doctor to, you know, induce with some extra Pertosin down there, but I think that that worked out just fine. I wish you, Darvish, had done a little better, but that wasn't enough to spoil what was a great day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
Well, tomorrow's the big day, big kickoff. I'm sure that we'll begin rolling with the taunting, the smack, and the highs and lows that every week is promising to bring. Looking forward to a great weekend.
Yep, this concludes the euphoria of the draft, and now we're getting to the regular season. No week one preview for us this week, but we will be recapping next week and get into week two previews, and we'll start having special guests pretty soon, with hopefully rotating through as many lead members as we can this year.
That's right. Well, if we had a little bit more time, I'm sure we could discuss why auction drafting is better than snake. I don't know how much time we've given to that. If it's been adequate over the past several years, I'm going to
think we covered it.
Okay. All right. Well, on that note, then, thanks for tuning in with us tonight. Good luck to all of you. We appreciate your fandom and for making this podcast what it is. Not to say that you and I wouldn't make it if we only had, you know, you and I as listeners. I'm sure that we still would. But it's nice to know that you guys enjoy it too. So thanks for joining us. He's Peter Elwood. I'm Seth Martin. We'll see you next time. Good night.